In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
One of the questions we consistently try to answer here on the iSpy Radio Show is why. Why does this agency do this, or why does a politician do that? A lot of times, there are no easy answers. To answer why requires digging into motivations. And a lot of times, those motivations are hidden away behind the scenes, and we don't know what's been promised. So a lot of times, it comes down to speculation on our part, because the answer to why is based on someone else's internal reasoning, a matter of calculations and of motivations weighted against their own desires, especially in terms of potential losses or gains. The reason we end up asking why so much is because we want to uncover the goals of individual politicians and of bureaucrats, or of groups of them in the form of agencies. What's their end goal? Where is this headed? Will it help or hurt? And in terms of our country, asking why often reveals whether someone is for America or against us. The shadow of why leaves footprints, a trail to be followed that can lead you to the end game. I mention all of this because I think on today's show, you too will be asking why quite a bit. For example, why would senators who were elected to stop Obama give away their own power? Like the Iran deal, why did so many senators vote for the Corker bill, which gave Obama the ability to fast-track the Iran deal? If you complained about Obama's abuse of executive power, why would you give him your power on top of what he already had? On this week's show, we follow those shadowy footprints and where they lead, and the logical conclusion may astound you. On this week's show, we're talking about a monstrosity known as the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. This is Obama's magnum opus for weakening America, and it must be stopped. The TPP is a major trade deal involving 12 Pacific Rim nations, including the U.S., Canada, Japan, Vietnam, and others. China is not a signer, but they can come in later through the back door, after it's been signed. Why, do you ask? Oh, you'll find out why. It's amazing that any American is backing the TPP. Common economic sense says that this will harm the U.S. economy, but here's the real kicker. Even its own supporters say that it will result in a 0.13% increase in the nation's GDP by 2025. But even that less than rosy projection is based on the assumption that the U.S. is at full employment over the next 9 years. We're taking this huge gamble and throwing out our economy for what? Barely 1/50th of a percentage increase per year over 9 years? That's crazy. So why would anyone in the U.S. support this? And not just why, but who is supporting this? Could one of the presidential candidates be misrepresenting their support for the TPP? We'll find out on today's iSpy Radio Show. To break down the TPP, I'd like to welcome Krista Huff. She is a retired VP with Morgan Stanley, where she managed client investment for 13 years. She now owns and manages the Goodfellow LLC website. That's goodfellowllc.com. Krista has written over 1,300 stock market articles and has also written more than 100 radio scripts and articles for Town Hall Finance. Krista, thanks for joining us today. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks so much, Mark. I'm happy to be here.
So let's just kind of start with some basics here, kind of sum up the TPP and what it hopes to do. Why don't you talk to our audience about that?
All right. The Trans-Pacific Partnership is a trade agreement between 12 countries that border the Pacific Ocean. These include the NAFTA countries, U.S., Canada, Mexico, and then a whole bunch of Asian countries and a couple of South American countries as well.
Right. And the overall goal of it is to remove trade barriers among the partners, correct?
Yes, the goal is to increase trade, and each country thinks that they will then be able to sell a whole bunch of their stuff to other countries that they're not currently selling to them now. Yes.
Okay. And so, correct me if I'm wrong, though. We've got the TPP, and before that, we've got the predecessors of NAFTA and CAFTA and some of these other ones. Didn't we used to just negotiate between single countries, or is this kind of like the new wave of trade agreements where we have these big blanket agreements between a multiple group of countries?
We did used to more often just deal with one or two countries at a time. And I think that the motivation to doing these very large trade agreements now has a lot more to do with globalism than it has to do with trade, because I think it's being patterned after the European Union, which actually started out as trade agreements between countries.
Well, the European Union, I can't say that's necessarily doing all that great, right? why would we model our own trade agreements then after something that appears to be kind of on the rocks?
You've got to look at the people who are pushing it. And there are different factions, but the globalists are one of the major factions. Mm. And the globalists, I think it has more to do with power than anything else. I mean, if you can be in charge of one entire country, that's awesome. But if you can be in charge of a group of countries and you're one of those power hungry people, you know, you're in heaven at that point.
Yeah, I guess so. Can they point to any sort of, you know, I mean, the reason you get into these trade agreements in the first place is for the economic benefits of it. Is there any economic advantage that they can point to that, oh, look how well this is working?
There aren't any that I have been able to find. Trade agreements traditionally lead directly to trade deficits between the U.S. and whichever country we're doing business with. For example, our trade deficit with China right now reached a record $368 billion last year. And what that means to the average person is that China sold $368 billion more of their products to the U.S. than we had sold to China.
Well, and it's not just China either, though. I mean, we've got a lot of trade deficits going on here. And I mean, when you look at the effect of NAFTA, and there's also CAFTA, that's with the Central American trade agreement. And again, it's just so puzzling that we've got all these people rushing in to try to make these agreements when it's so obviously failing.
Yes, our government keeps repeating things that don't work, whether it happens to be Social Security or welfare or the income tax system. We just keep throwing good money after bad, and it's time to stop. It's time to say, no, we're not going to keep doing this. We're going to say no to the TPP, and now we're going to go back and analyze and fix previous trade agreements and fix our policies going forward.
Yeah, and there's some scarier elements to that, too, especially as far as the TPP is concerned. Let's go ahead and take a break a little bit early here, because we've got kind of, I'd like in the next, I'm going to break down the TPP itself. And so coming up, we'll do that along with the TPA to get a better understanding of the various trade barriers that are out there as well. So lots more on the iSpy Radio Show with our special guest, Krista Huff, back after this. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show, helping you get a little more intelligence on big government. Today we're talking about international trade issues, in particular the TPP, that's the Trans-Pacific Partnership. NAFTA on steroids, as it's been called. Our guest today is Krista Huff, financial analyst and investing expert, and also a former VP with Morgan Stanley. So let's take a step back a little bit to talk about what launched all this. A bill known as the TPA, that's the Trade Promotion Authority. The TPA bill was an attempt to streamline the process, but how did or how does the TPA streamline the process?
The TPA makes the trade agreement now very greasy, so it slides through Congress really fast. Congress now needs fewer people to vote yes in order for the trade agreement to pass. The Senate loses its ability to do a filibuster. The House and the Senate lose their ability to amend even one word of this document that is 5,544 pages long, and there will be very little debate and no amendments whatsoever. So basically, Congress handed Obama the trade agreement on a silver platter.
Wow. This sounds suspiciously like the Iran deal, where the senators essentially voted away their own power to override a treaty. I mean, you look at this kind of thing and you just shake your head. You think, why on earth would they do this? And it comes back to this notion, I think you really nail it, is this notion of globalists, because nobody that has any business experience is going to agree to this. You know, these senators are supposedly all about free trade and the free market, but boy, this is nonsensical.
It is. I don't entirely hold our congressional representatives responsible to the extent that the average person would. And here's why. I went to Washington, D.C. 9 times last year to fight Fast Track Trade Promotion Authority. And what I would do is I would meet with congressional staffers and explain to them what Fast Track and the TPP were all about and why they should vote no. And time and again, I'd say at least 80% of the meetings that I attended, the staffers were somewhere between completely ill-informed on these topics to moderately informed with lots and lots of holes in their knowledge base. So when they voted yes, when the Congress people voted yes on Fast Track, I can assure you, many of them were just doing what people like John Boehner asked them to do, assuming that people like John Boehner knew more about trade than they did. For example, there are doctors in Congress. There are CEOs from other industries. There are school teachers in Congress. There are people who have never studied trade. So it's not like they were trying to be evil. It is that they completely didn't have a handle on the topic and were assuming that when people told them trade is good, vote for this, they assumed that they were being given good guidance.
And I understand that. But at the same time, you've been elected to Congress to represent the people and defend the interests of the United States. And I think it's high time that these school teachers and doctors and everybody else realize that people like John Boehner are not their friend.
And they are starting to realize that.
Well, and that's good, you know. But if nothing else, I mean, they've got to, it gets back to this notion of they've never read the bill and don't understand it. But again, you would think that if they just cracked it a little bit, like what we just did, where there's this notion that there are no amendments allowed, boy, I would say, wait a minute, I can't agree to that, because you have, it's like some of these environmental issues that we come across here in Oregon, where they have these public meetings, and in order to get into the public meetings, you have to sign a non-disclosure. And but as part of that, you also have to agree to the outcomes of the meeting before you even know what the agreements are. And it sounds like that's the same thing that's happening here at the TPA, is you essentially had to agree to the TPP before you even know what it says. Because if you can't amend it, that's scary.
Yeah, and there were two other major powerful things happening last year which helped helped pass Fast Track. First of all, the TPP was under lock and key. Most legislators who wanted to see it were point blank not allowed to see it. But the ones who were allowed into the secret locked room to see the trade agreement, keeping in mind that it's 5,000 pages long, they were given a hard copy of it. They were not allowed to bring in paper and pen to take notes. They could not bring in a telephone to take photographs. And they had only 1 hour to read it, a 5,000-page document, and then they had to leave. So it was very, very hard for our legislators to see it. So that helped prevent the word getting out on what was really in the trade deal. The other thing that really pushed this over the top was, presidential candidate Ted Cruz was a huge proponent of Fast Track and the trade agreements, and he convinced many, many people to vote for it, especially from the, let's say, the Freedom Caucus, the constitutional side of the Republican Party. With Ted Cruz standing behind it, Mr. Constitution, they assumed that this was a legitimate deal. And then he changed his vote on the morning of the Senate vote after the House of Representatives had already voted. He pulled the rug out from all of them, and he voted no after everyone else voted yes.
Wow. 'Cause I thought that he had voted for it.
There were several votes, and he voted yes on the first of the several votes, but then on the final vote that really counted, he changed his vote to no that morning and announced it publicly.
So after convincing everybody else to vote for it, he opted not to.
I can stand here. Yep, I can stand here and tell you that if he had been against it 2 months prior, Fast Track never would have passed.
Wow. You know, the other thing that's really shocking about that is, as an attorney, that's like somebody saying, well, I'm going to hand you this agreement. Do you agree to it without ever having viewed it? I mean, that doesn't make sense even from an attorney standpoint. So let's go ahead and talk about that a little bit more in the next segment. But we are coming up on a break here. Everyone stay with us. Lots more with Krista Huff. And welcome back. We're talking today on the iSpy Radio Show about the TPP. That's the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal that has and still is dominating the presidential races on both the Republican and Democrat sides. We're talking with Krista Huff, She's a financial analyst and investing expert and former VP with Morgan Stanley. So we were talking about the political side there in the last segment, especially with Ted Cruz. We're going to set that aside for the moment because I really want to talk a little bit more about some of the especially bad elements of the TPP, and then we'll come back to the politics later. But so the big thing that I want to make sure that we cover that a lot of people I don't think are even aware of is that under the TPP, there is a huge loss of U.S. sovereignty on this. So why don't you talk to us a little bit about that?
Mark, the TPP creates two global governance organizations. One of them is the new Trans-Pacific Partnership Commission, which will oversee everything about this trade agreement and the 12 countries. And the other is a global tribunal, a court system. Any decision that they make overrides any decision that could be made within the American justice system or by Congress. So if the TPP Commission or the Global Tribunal makes a decision that's contrary to U.S. law or the will of the people in the U.S., it's tough luck, Charlie. By signing the TPP, we are saying in advance, we agree to any decision you make on our behalf forever. The TPP is a living document, and what that means is the Global Tribunal and the Global Commission each have the power to change the TPP as they see fit for the rest of eternity. And if somebody decides to, let's pretend we were at war with China. If the TPP Commission votes to let China into the trade agreement, suddenly we are obligated to do trade with China even though we're at war with them. We can't stop this stuff.
Wow.
We only get one vote, and the scary thing is of the 12 countries, one of those countries is Brunei, which functions under Sharia law. They kill gay people, and yet their vote counts as much in the TPP Commission as the U.S. vote will count.
Wow. Okay, so let's unpack this a little bit, because you're talking about using these global courts, and they can force through regulations here in the U.S. For example, they could force through a carbon tax, all these environmental issues that we talk about a lot on here on the iSpy radio show. I can see where you'd be, you know, if you're a corporation looking to do business internationally, especially with any of these countries governed by the TPP, I mean, I can see where you'd be in constant fights in courts to deal with attempts by other nations to lower or adjust our standards in order to meet theirs. Am I wrong in assuming that?
You're not only correct, but there's a big issue right now with the World Trade Organization and NAFTA. Mexico has taken the U.S. to global court because they do not want to comply with U.S. dolphin safe tuna regulations. And the World Trade Organization has sided with Mexico and asked the U.S. to change our standards. And the U.S. has not changed our standards in the way Mexico wants us to. And so Mexico has announced that they'll be applying something like $400 million of tariffs per year, and there's a whole list of products that they're going to put the tariffs on until we turn around and kowtow to them on dolphin-safe tuna labeling. And in the bigger picture, corporations are using the Global Tribunal as a bully pulpit to get countries to roll back their health regulations, their environmental regulations, their financial regulations. And that is the biggest reason that American corporations are interested in establishing, ratifying the TPP, because they realize that they will be more easily able to do business as they wish anywhere in the world.
So essentially what this sounds like is that if the TPP goes through, you would have a corporation that, let's just take labor laws.
Mm-hmm.
So suddenly the U.S. labor laws would essentially be set aside in favor of the TPP. Is that correct as well?
You know, to a large extent. For example, the immigration aspect of the of one of the other trade agreements that's also being worked out right now specifically says that any of the people that we're forced to accept coming into our country to work here do not have to deal with our labor laws, our minimum wage laws, that the companies that hire these foreign workers can treat them any way they want outside the U.S. justice system. So, yes, these global tribunals can say your minimum wage laws do not apply to anyone doing business under the TPP. And there's nothing we can do. If we ratify this, we are agreeing in advance to that.
Mm. So what's the effect then on local and state laws then? Or does this just apply to things at the federal level?
What's been happening, especially in Canada already under NAFTA, is that local and provincial areas become afraid to implement laws that might annoy the other countries, because now they know if they implement, let's say they wanted a new water safety regulation, they know from experience on watching these other lawsuits with other participants that if they implement this law, they will be taken to global court, which is extremely expensive. And then global court can fine them hundreds of millions or even billions of dollars. And there's lots of precedent for that also with the trade agreements. So it scares municipalities into caving in to corporate demands. And, you know, I am a stock market expert. I'm the last person in the world to say, like, oh, corporations are evil. However, people can be evil, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So there are evil people anywhere in the world, from a monastery to the Girl Scouts to a corporation. And if you have the wrong person running an organization, that organization can do harm. And so I'm not so much, pro-corporation as I am pro-truth and pro-righteousness. And that's why I'm fighting the TPP.
Mm. In terms of these courts, well, do they have the ability to levy fines, or is it just about imposing tariffs on a good? In other words, I mean, if they find that an industry is acting outside the bounds of the TPP, can they come in and fine them? And if so, who then gets that money?
That's a really good question. Ecuador, the country of Ecuador, was ordered to pay $2.3 billion to Occidental Petroleum. And if you read all the details of the global court decision, the global court literally wrote, Ecuador did not do the thing that Occidental accused them of, and Occidental was in the wrong in that area. However, based on this new thing that we are adjudicating, Ecuador owes Occidental $2.3 billion and bangs the gavel and boom, it's done.
Wow.
So this is not safe. This is nothing like the U.S. justice system. There are no appeals to the global court. Whatever they say goes, boom, you can't change it.
Oh, my word. You know, people are already feeling pretty powerless in this
mm-hmm.
In this day and age, and now we're handing even more power to not only the big corporations, but to countries and a world court that are completely out of our control.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go ahead and take a break right there. Lots more with Krista Huff. Stay with us. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today about the TPP, that's the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Certainly has been dominating the news lately, and with both Trump and Cruz coming out against it. We'll cover the political aspect a little bit more in the next segment. But for now, I want to really revisit some of these bad elements. I mean, we kind of just scratched the surface of it. We were talking about these global courts, but another really bad element of this, I think, is the protectionism it offers for some companies. Under the guise of intellectual properties. I mean, it's a bad element from consumers, maybe not so much for the multinational corporations. So what are your thoughts on that?
I think we have too many countries involved that we're trying to please, and we cannot please them all. And so there are going to be lots of winners and losers. I'll give you an example. Right now, the U.S. pharmaceutical industry is very upset at the way the TPP has turned out, because they're going to have to lower the number of years of exclusivity they have on new drugs that they develop.
Right.
Okay, that's fair. The time frame is about half of what the U.S. time frame currently is. So there's an example of us having to change a U.S. law to comply with a trade agreement. Now look at Peru on the other side of that. Peru right now has no time frame of exclusivity on pharmaceuticals, and Peru has the highest pharmaceutical costs of the 12 participating countries. So when they are accepting the TPP, they are being harmed because they don't produce the drugs, they buy the drugs. So they are very happy that there will only be like a 5 to 8 year term of exclusivity within the agreement rather than the 12 years that the U.S. wanted, because now Peru will get cheaper drugs a little bit quicker. And Peru has made it very, very clear that they will not renegotiate that. And by the way, none of this trade agreement can be renegotiated, not a single word of it. So when you see in the news the trade ministers are meeting to talk about how things ended up with intellectual property or food safety or whatnot, they're not going to change the agreement. It's more for show. They're having these meetings for show.
Well, in terms of not being able to renegotiate or change any words of it, I don't understand it from the other country's point of view. Wouldn't they want to be able to change this if they get into it and find out, whoa, we are totally getting screwed on this?
You know, a lot of this has to do with professional politicians and saving face. They've put so many years of effort into this. And now that they're not getting what they wanted, you know, it's just a couple of trade ministers and a couple of presidents. It's not the citizens themselves. The citizens, especially in America, they have seen all the job loss that's associated with trade agreements. We've had 55,000 manufacturing facilities go out of business in the last 10 years or so because of trade agreements. So the trade ministers, they don't really have skin in the game. For them, it's just a part of their career, and they're, as long as they make a good show on trying to achieve what they want for their country, they've done their job. They're not the ones who get hurt.
Yeah. You know, just listen to this. It really reminds me of that saying from one of our founders. I forget which one that said it, but it's the best government is the one that governs least, and we are just giving away so much of our power on this. It just becomes astounding. So here's another bad element about this is that it apparently allows foreign countries to bid on U.S. contracts. And a recent headline on the Drudge Report was saying that New Balance, a shoe factory based in New England, is suddenly saying that they were asked by the Obama administration not to say anything negative about TPP because they were dangling the promise that they might allow them to compete for foot equipment. Well, it turns out that the TPP allows any government, you know, any foreign country to come in and start bidding for our own U.S. contracts. Is that all correct?
Yes. I believe it outlaws Buy America programs. We are no longer allowed to give preference to local companies, to American companies. And again, it gets worse. What if there's an American government contract for military equipment or military technology, and we are forced to give equal access to all of the trade partners? Well, let me back up one moment and tell you that China has been welcomed to join this trade agreement by Hillary Clinton, by John Kerry, and any country can join this trade agreement after we ratify it.
Right.
So China could literally be a member next year. Now, let's say we have a military contract and we China bids for it. If we don't give the contract to China, China takes us to global court. If we do give the contract to China, China can screw up the product or put, you know, special bugs in the technology so that they can steal all our secrets, et cetera. You're sort of damned if you do and damned if you don't.
Yeah, you can have a kill switch on your fighters to, you know, we'll just switch off this button and all of our fighters fall out of the sky. This is astounding. I mean, it really is. All this stuff that I'm not hearing anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's so much more that we didn't even talk about. Can I talk about country of origin labeling?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. So it's widely known that Asian seafood is highly polluted. And as I've looked into it, there's everything from chemicals and antibiotics to fish being fed pig feces. And shrimp coming over here on Malaysian slave ships. And when I say slave ships, I literally mean human beings who were stolen and forced to work for no money or they will be thrown overboard. All of this factors into the trade agreement. Now, imagine that those fish products, those food products coming over to the U.S., we are no longer allowed to turn them away based on their poor quality. That's in the trade agreement. The trade agreement says is that if the seafood is or any food is good enough for the people who live in the country of origin, then it is good enough for the people in the U.S. So now it comes into your supermarket, and I'm in a Kroger area, so we have our Kroger supermarket, and you're going to go to buy shrimp. Well, country of origin labeling is outlawed with the trade agreement. So you're going to look at two packages of shrimp, and one of them costs $5.99 a pound, and the other one costs $12.99 a pound, because that's the Gulf Coast shrimp. It's the healthy stuff. And you, as the consumer, do not know that they came from two countries. You're just looking at two different prices, and you're saying, well, hell yeah, I'm going to take the cheaper one. Well, it's cheaper because it came over from slaves, and it's completely polluted. But the consumers won't know that. So, again, we could talk for hours about the details of this trade agreement. It is horrifying.
Well, with 5,500 some pages, I'm sure there's plenty to talk about. Let's go ahead and take a break right now, though. Coming up, we're going to be talking about some of the political aspects of all this. Stay with us. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. Talking today to Krista Huff. She is a former VP with Morgan Stanley. And you know, this is just shocking, some of the stuff that we are talking about today with, about this Trans-Pacific Partnership. And it keeps coming back to the politicians who push this through. And I was listening to another show that you were on. It was Carrie Lutz, I believe, and Financial Survival Network. And it was an interview that you gave towards the end of March, or March 23rd, if my memory serves. And I got to tell you, I heard a lot of rather disturbing things in there that really give me pause as a voter. And so let's kind of start, first of all, talking about some of the bigger boosters of all this. You've got Obama on the one hand. You've got some D's, I think, but also quite a few R's, especially the leadership on side of things. So in terms of the political candidates, let's start with just real quickly the Democrat side. Are Hillary Clinton and Bernie? It seems to me Hillary is a proponent and Bernie is not. Am I remembering that right?
Hillary was a very strong proponent, very publicly for a long time, until she realized that she would have trouble getting elected if she were publicly supporting the TPP, at which point she changed her stance. But it's very easy to Google her previous stance promoting the TPP. Bernie Sanders is against the TPP because he well knows the trade agreements kill jobs, and that's a classic Democrat stance. So, yes, we can believe him when he says he's against the TPP.
So Clinton, if elected, well, she's saying what she needs to in order to get elected. But then once she's elected, I imagine she's going to turn on a dime and support this, correct?
I would fully expect that simply based on all of her previous statements.
Okay, so let's look at the Republican side. Trump is pretty clearly against this. Cruz says he's against it. I don't know what Kasich's stance on that. Do you have any idea on that?
Kasich is pro-TPP.
He is. Okay.
Yes.
So in terms of that interview, the Carrie Lutz one, we'll put that up on iSpyRadio.com. This is show 616 if you're looking in the archives. I got to say, you brought up some things about Cruz that were a little disturbing. That gives me pause. We said earlier that he was for it, but then voted at the very end against it. What else can you tell us about Cruz's stance on this?
He voted against some amendments that would have helped us. There was an amendment that would have made it a requirement that the U.S. Congress had to be consulted if China or any other nation were applying to join the TPP. Cruz voted against that. There was an amendment about currency manipulation to try to put in tough language against currency manipulation, and Senator Cruz voted against that. So what else did you want to know about him, Ted Cruz?
Well, I guess overall then, he is saying publicly that he's against TPP, but from what I'm hearing you say, his actions would seem to belie that. Is that your take on things?
Yeah, you know, yes. Yes, it absolutely is. I personally firmly believe that Ted Cruz is in with the globalist faction, the Bushes, the Clintons. He worked extremely closely with the Bush administration. He was one of the key people on George Bush's reelection campaign. These folks are globalists. They like the idea of global governance. And not only that, but he and his wife worked in many other capacities directly with global trade, especially his wife, for her entire career. As a matter of fact, all right, so let me give you an analogy here. If you were anti-abortion, would you take a job as a special assistant to the director of Planned Parenthood?
More than likely not.
Right. Heidi Cruz was a special assistant to Robert Zoellick, whose resume reads like an encyclopedia of the New World Order.
Yes, yes.
He was president of the World Bank. He was with the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Project for the New American Century, the World Trade Organization. The man lived and breathed globalism, global trade, and he was an author, as Heidi was, of several of these global trade agreements. Heidi was his special assistant, and that does not mean he was his secretary, okay? That means this was her career. So for So I don't believe the cruise folks for a second when they say that they're against the TPP.
Wow. And let's walk a little bit through Heidi there, just because, again, this is not being reported out there. The Trilateral Commission that Zolik was part of, I mean, this is a quote from Senator Barry Goldwater. The Trilateral Commission is an international as intended to be the vehicle for multinational consolidation of the commercial and banking interests by seizing control of the political government of the U.S. I mean, this is scary stuff. And here she is, actually his special assistant, the guy that was part of this. I got to say, as somebody on the fence there between Trump and Cruz, that really gives me pause.
It is the number one thing that gives me pause about Ted Cruz. And however, I have so much pause about Donald Trump that if I literally had to vote between the two people today, I would actually vote for Ted Cruz. And I know that sounds really odd, but here's why. I firmly believe that we can defeat this trade agreement. And I believe that we have set in motion an awareness among American people and the American congressional legislators that trade agreements are harmful to this country, and we have to stop drinking the Kool-Aid. And so even if Ted Cruz were president, I think it's going to be really hard to pass trade agreements in the coming years because people are wising up.
Well, that certainly is the advantage of having a legislative branch that can derail this. But from what we were saying about the TPA earlier, do you feel that there are some cracks there that they could kind of slide this through, particularly maybe in a lame duck session?
I don't think it's going to pass this year. Okay, so I was in D.C. last month, and I'm going again next week, and something very interesting happened last month. I visited 12 congressional offices. I visited 6 that had voted no on Fast Track and 6 that had voted yes. And of the 6 that had voted yes, one might normally assume that they're then going to vote yes on the TPP. However, 2 of them told me point blank they will vote no on the TPP. 2 of them told me they are leaning no, which is a very meaningful phrase, leaning no. And then 2 of them said that they're in the middle, they're on the fence, they're looking at pros and cons. But none of those 6 said were leaning towards voting for the trade agreement. That's an astounding reversal of the mood in Congress. So I will be going again this coming week, and I'll have more to report back to you, you know, in 10 days.
Well, I hope that is true. I hope that people are starting to wake up to this. And in terms of what the TPA did, though, is it a 2/3 majority that has to agree to this, or is it a 50% plus one?
50% plus one, thanks to Fast Track.
Wow. Okay. All right. Let's go ahead and take a break right there. We'll finish up with Kristen Huff after this. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show, helping you keep an eye on big government. And we are talking today to Krista Huff, talking about the TPP. This is kind of the epitome of big government. To listen to some of this. Krista has written over 1,300 stock market articles, and she has also written more than 100 radio scripts and articles for Town Hall Finance. Her website, if you'd like to go visit that, which I highly encourage you to do, is goodfellowllc.com. And, of course, we'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com as well. So, Krista, we want to talk about kind of wrap things up here with the TPP and kind of give people also something they can do about things. But before we get to that, though, I'd like to circle back around to get your opinions on Trump. Do you buy the idea that he is anti-globalist, or is this just kind of really just blather on his part?
I believe that Trump is very aware that these trade agreements have killed the manufacturing base and in jobs in the U.S. We've lost 5.7 million jobs in the last 10 years, largely due to NAFTA. He is aware of that. He is correct when he states that. The rest of what he says about global trade, tariffs, et cetera, you know, I think he's just bloviating, okay? But let's ignore that. Focus on, yes, trade agreements hurt jobs. We need to stop doing this and figure out what we're doing wrong. So we stop by defeating the TPP.
Well, in terms of the tariffs and trades, you know, he's talking about slapping a tariff on things coming out of Mexico if a company, Ford or Carrier, one of these other ones, move down there. In terms of the TPP, one of the things that he constantly talks about is the currency manipulation. And is he correct on that? I mean, that they are really, I mean, is that something that has to be addressed in the TPP? And is it being addressed in the TPP?
I will tell you, the currency manipulation is so serious that if you are doing business with a foreign country and the foreign country refuses to address currency manipulation, then there is literally no point in doing the transaction at all, because currency manipulation changes the value of a transaction so that the other country or company makes more profit and you, the U.S. company, make less profit. And that's one of the many reasons that we are getting killed on trade, because the U.S. does not manipulate currencies, but we are about to sign up to do transactions with some of the world's most egregious currency manipulators, including Japan, Malaysia, Vietnam, and quite possibly very soon, China.
And the TPP, I mean, does that address the currency manipulation? I mean, are they even going to try to bring that up? I mean, the TPP itself, let me just maybe kind of give some final thoughts on this. The people negotiating this right now, is it etched in stone at this point, or are there elements like currency manipulation that could be added to the TPP?
It is etched in stone, and every attempt to put in a currency manipulation provision was voted down.
And the people doing this negotiations, these are just our trade representatives, or are they industry trade representatives? Who exactly is doing the negotiations here?
The U.S. trade representative who supervises the entire thing is Michael Froman, and he was a law school buddy of President Obama's. The chief agricultural negotiator, which is frankly the most important industry with the TPP, the group that promotes this more than any other group is the agricultural group. The chief negotiator was a man. Oh, I've got it. The chief agricultural negotiator for the TPP was a Monsanto lobbyist named Islam Siddiqui.
Oh,
no longer has that job, but he had that job during the bulk of the negotiation.
Wow. Wow, this is just, it just keeps getting deeper and thicker, and oh my God, I mean, you know, I spent 20 years as a fiction writer and editor, and you couldn't write this stuff with quite,
I know.
Oh my God. Well, anyway, you know, we only got about a minute and a half here or so with you. Just real quick, what can people be doing in order to help defeat this?
Okay, the vote's going to be really close, so every phone call to Congress counts. I want you to call whoever your local congressperson is, but I also want you to call the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, Representative Kevin Brady from Texas, because he's very influential and he is aware of the cracks in the armor here. The phone number for the U.S. Capitol switchboard is 202-224-3121. You ask for the congressperson's office. A young millennial answers the phone. You say, please ask the congressperson to vote no on the TPP. You literally do not have to say anything else. Nobody quizzes you to see if you're an expert on trade. They might ask you your name and your hometown, which is perfectly normal, and then the conversation is over. Those phone calls are tremendously valuable, and they help me get my work accomplished.
Yeah, and you don't need to be intimidated, like you say. I mean, it's just a matter of, I just want him to vote no, and you don't need to defend it. Just vote no. And that's a great point. So that number again, 202-224-3121, and we'll make sure that we put that up on iSpyRadio.com as well.
Chris,
this has been a fascinating discussion. We'll have to have you back sometime in the near future, especially as this continues to unroll. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much.
All right. Bye-bye. Wow. A lot to think about today. Not the least of which is that Krista believes the Cruises are part of the globalists and that Ted is not being honest about his support for the TPP. I have to be honest, that was a real shock, but she'd still vote for him, which was another real shock. Well, we all have to make our own decisions on these things. The problem for me, though, is if you're not being honest about this, well, what do you think? I'd like to hear. Head to iSpyRadio.com, look for today's show. You can leave comments there or drop me an email. While you're there, get that phone number for the Capitol switchboard, because this has got to be stopped. You heard her. Once we're in it, there's no getting out. And be sure to share that, because like we say every week, The best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.